Hey, what's up, guys? Justin Fall here from the Fourth Watch, and we have got a special presentation for you tonight. We are here with the Next Gen panel from the upcoming True Legends Conference. We've got Josh Peck, Timothy Alberino, and the famous Gon Shimura, Face Like the Sun, who does not have a webcam, but you will be seeing his logo tonight. Man, it's really exciting to have everybody together. We've got a lot going on. Everybody's working on different projects right now, but we're coming together to discuss a little bit about the True Legends Conference that's coming up this September. It's going to be an amazing conference. The topics, the people involved. Man, Timothy, tell us a little bit about what's going on right now.
Well, the True Legends Conference is coming up in September from the 14th to the 16th. And during that conference, one of our featured events is what we're calling the Next Gen panel, which features us, as well as Owen Schroyer, who was not able to make it on this broadcast tonight. And the reason why we've decided to do a next gen, what we're calling a next gen panel, is because the topic of the conference is transhumanism in the hybrid age. And transhumanism is going to profoundly affect our generation before we're dead, and our kids for sure, and most definitely our grandkids. And that's a statement that the generation in front of us really wasn't able to make. This is a phenomenon that's going to begin to manifest in our lifetime. And so we wanted to address the millennials. I mean, I'm right on the edge of a millennial. I was born in 1983, so I just made it into the millennial category. And so we're being primed right now. Millennials are being primed. We're being primed, and our children are being primed to accept the dehumanization of the human race, because that's what it's about. It's about posthumanism. And so really what we're trying to catalyze with the conference, and I know through your guys' work, all of you independently, Owen Schroyer with InfoWars, is a resistance against the dehumanization of the human race and standing for the traditional values, traditional trademarks, I should say, of humanity. When I say the traditional trademarks, I'm talking about the genetic trademarks. I'm talking about the sociological trademarks, the societal trademarks of the human species, because we're losing the ability, not so much us, but certainly our kids are losing the ability to even communicate with one another anymore as human beings, the way that human beings have been communicating for thousands of years. I mean, even the most fundamental, the most basic interactions of the human race are changing now, right now are changing. And this change has only really began about a decade and a half ago. And so this is brand new. There's the only precedent for the age in which we are entering, which is being called the hybrid age, not by us, but by futurists and technologists, are calling the age that we're entering the hybrid age. And that's why we're calling our conference Transhumanism and the Hybrid Age. The only precedent for the time that we're entering is the world before the flood of Noah, the pre-flood world, the first hybrid age, because we're getting ready to enter into a second hybrid age, a new hybrid age. And the ramifications could not be more calamitous for the human race. And that's why we are the resistance. That phrase has been used and rehashed so many times by so many different organizations. But let me tell you something. It applies to us most coherently. Why? Because when we resist the dehumanization of transhumanism, we are defending the human race. We are the defenders of humanity. And so that's what this conference is about, and that's what we're going to be discussing on the Gen 6 panel. I'm sorry, on the Next Gen panel.
No, that's awesome. We've got a handful of things we want to talk about tonight. And the cool thing that I just want to say as we welcome everybody on tonight is that everybody on this panel has done some type of work exposing transhumanism. Goodness, I was involved in this back when I was in college. I focused in all my psychology courses, all my thesis projects were dealing with transhumanism, transgenics. At the time, we were told this was crazy. This is never going to come to fruition. And here we are now, we're not so crazy anymore. We're seeing things happen with the technology that are being woven into the fabric of our everyday lifestyles. So much to the point that you can't even go to Starbucks or your local coffee shop or even church. You go to your church and the kids are all just like this. I mean, they're not even communicating anymore without social media. There's so much to get into, but I just want to say everybody on the panel tonight and who is going to be on the panel at the True Legends Conference, we've all done a decent amount of research and work into understanding transhumanism, where it's come from, where it is currently, and where it's estimated to go. So anyway, let me just go ahead and welcome on Josh Peck. Josh?
Hey, how are you doing, Justin?
Great, great. How's it going?
It's going great. Good to see you again. It's been so long since we've seen each other. It's been, what, 5 hours maybe?
I saw Josh at work today, so...
Yes, yes, which is, it's always good. It's actually, you know, for those who don't know, I went through this knee surgery thing, so I had to work from home for a while, but it's nice to be back and everything. But yeah, it's good to be in this panel talking to you guys.
So Josh, you've done quite a bit of research into the transhumanism agenda, and I'm just going to say this. What's cool about having Josh around is that, Josh, you take almost a little bit more of a conservative view on some of the topics than I do personally, or that even Timothy might take, or Gons. We all kind of bring different angles to the table. One thing I like about you, Josh, is that you challenge people not to just believe all the crazy right up front. You're very skeptical about accepting some of the crazier information. I'm skeptical too, but I tend to dive into it and say, you know what, I'm quicker to say there's reality to some of this probably than you would be. But we're at a point now on the timeline where these things are in our faces. Like you can't deny the technology and where it is with the transgenics, you know, modifying DNA, bringing in all types of technology. What are some of the latest things that you've noticed about transhumanism and some of the transgenic technology that's taking place right now?
Yeah, and I got to say, my mind has actually been blown on how advanced this has become in our current age, because you're right. With a lot of things, I tend to be a little bit more skeptical than most. But a lot of that was because a few years ago, I used to be really susceptible, and there were more than a few times where I was proven wrong, and I got a little sick of that. So I started having some more skepticism about it. But this one, it's difficult to be too skeptical about what is ahead. And I wanted to know what was actually going on, what transhumanists really believe, what they think. And so I invited one on my show on Into the Multiverse, Zoltan Isfahan, and we had a really good conversation. We completely disagreed on everything, but the point of that was, and this is something I think is lacking in the church, and that's why I'm glad that this conference is happening, that this panel is happening, and also that prominent transhumanists are and transhumanist thinkers and people like that are being invited to take part in the conference and speak, because I believe that we do have to hear out the other side, not so our minds will be changed and so we can be convinced that their way is the right way. You know, I mean, if they were able to come up with a compelling enough argument, then everybody could make up their own minds on that. But not because of that, but because it sharpens our own arguments better. And we can't really know what our arguments are until we hear the opposition. So I took one of the most, flamboyant, maybe is the right word, transhumanists in existence. I mean, he drove around the country in a van shaped like a coffin trying to spread the message of transhumanism. I mean, we as Christians don't drive in cars shaped like crosses to spread the gospel. So something's got to be said for that. But I really wanted to know what he thought and what he believed. And yeah, it was a productive conversation. But for me personally, it really opened my eyes to how prevalent this is and really how evil this ideology is behind transhumanism, because it subverts the cross. It subverts everything that is good that we believe in. And just real quick, you know, and something that's been discussed all throughout human history is morality. What exactly is morality? Now, you have more nihilistic people in the world who believe that it's morality is just a subjective preference that we all have. You know, whatever is good for you is good for you, but it doesn't mean that it's good for me, and there's no objective standard. Well, if that's the case, then sure, transhumanism makes a lot of sense to some people. But if that's not the case, if there's an objective morality that we can all at least on a human level adhere to in some sense, unless we're just in denial, then it's a different story altogether. I contributed a chapter to a book called The Milieu that was a collaborative effort from people at Skywatch TV and some other researchers out there. In that, I discussed part of that, the morality issue, because there are those out there who would attribute morality to biology, who would say morality is nothing more than another term to describe biological humanity. Yet, if that's the case, that would mean the less moral you are, the less biologically human you are. So, you know, would that mean that there are certain regions of the earth that where people inhabit that may be a little bit more primitive than we are, yet they're not as human because of that? You know, I would seriously doubt people who aren't, people on the left side of the political spectrum would be really willing to admit to that. So I think that's an issue, what the topic of morality, what that specifies. There's a political issue, too. If transhumanism actually becomes a reality, and it is now, you know, this isn't some far off thing. It's happening now, and it's only going to increase. Well, is that going to thrive in a privatized environment through capitalism? And I actually think that's where it'll thrive the best. Or is it going to be through government programs and more on that approach? Which, if that is the case, I think people tend to think that that's more scary, but it will stave it off a bit because, you know, let's face it, the government isn't good at anything. So that'll slow down the process a little bit more. But still, I don't advocate for government control of anything, let alone something like this. But that's why we're here. We're getting the word out because I think people are still many people are still stuck in this idea that this is not a big deal. It's a very small faction of humanity. It's a very small counterculture. It has no bearing on anybody's lives right now. And if it does, if anything does come out of it, it won't be for another century at least, because technologically we're nowhere there yet. All of that is false. And Justin, you could even speak to this in Hollywood, in children's cartoons, and in media, a popular media and entertainment. This idea of transhumanism has been shoved down our throat, but it's not called transhumanism. It's called the Avengers. It's called X-Men. It's called Spider-Man. It's called all the things that we as millennials grew up watching and still love. And I do too. They're great stories, but at the same time, they still have this agenda that's being pushed and has been being pushed, meaning that once this technology is readily available for the masses, it's going to be accepted, because there's that nostalgia part of it too. So, I am not a skeptic on transhumanism anymore. I haven't been for quite some time now, and you're right. I do tend to be more on the skeptical side with this kind of stuff, but I can't deal with transhumanism. Yes.
Let me, I want us to get into the Hollywood aspect of these things here in just a second. But speaking on the morality clause, if you want to call it that, that's a perfect time to go ahead and bring on Gon Chimera.
Yes.
Gons, you and I have done programs together between Fourth Watch and Canary Cry Radio, where we've talked about transhumanism. And I think one of the interesting little tidbits that you have kind of brought into my mind is that there is a faction of so-called Christian transhumanists. Tell us a little bit about that, how you got into this topic, and a little bit about where you're at right now with your studies.
Sure. Yeah. You know, when I first started looking at transhumanism, it was the thing that clicked, you know, everything in place for me in terms of what was going on with the Nephilim and the Old Testament, and understanding what Jesus meant by as in the days of Noah, understanding what was going on at the Tower of Babel. All those aspects made sense to me when the modern transhumanist movement, you know, made itself sort of apparent. And I myself, I'm the same as born the same year as Tim. So go 83.
Hey, 83, me too. That's three of us.
I'm 84. You're all older than me. You're all ancient.
Why don't you type
in?
Type in 3 for 83 in gematria and see what we get.
God. But here's the thing, that the aspect of Christian transhumanism, and that's what I was going to bring up actually, was the diversity of of approaches to this, because it appeals to all religions, because it seems to have an eschatological, and I don't mean that in like a, you know, negative end of the world, but just in terms of an end of things, it seems to have a resonance with a lot of people, with the New Agers. It's the ascension, with you know, even with Christianity, the new heaven and the new earth, these ideas have been there. And certainly those are true things that we're waiting for, but there's a big obstacle in the way, or a big thing that happens, this antichrist, this anti-counterfeit messiah thing that's going to happen that the church doesn't seem to pay attention to. That my concern is that with the church, not just not talking about the issue, but even more so, I think I'm probably, I don't know, 3/4 of the way through, I'm not going to put a timeline on it, but Age of Deceit 3 is moving along very quickly, and it's coming together very, very nicely in the last month and a half. But that means that I'm categorically disturbed about where things are headed. And I know that Josh talked a little bit about the skepticism of transhumanism before, now how he's not a skeptic. But, you know, this idea of a hive mind. Now, we've thrown the idea around, the Borg, and, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, of course, they're trying to build the hive mind. But the concept of a hive mind and groupthink and actually creating a network of people to better humanity is a huge, huge part of what is happening. And it's something that's been projected from, I'm discovering, much earlier than most people would think. I mean, you know, you'd expect the scientific revolution and then, you know, all this stuff. And of course, there was always, you know, writings in the Kabbalah and things like that. And there have been researchers to show how Kabbalah and quantum science seems to be the same thing. It's just a modern repackaged version of it. But the occult origins is unreal. And the fact that the communication technologies we have right now are effectively what long-awaited occultists have talked about. It's amazing when you read some of these quotes from about 150 years ago, 130 years ago. Here's one from Helena Blavatsky, who I know you guys are familiar with. If you're not, she's a late 18th or 19th century occultist. She was a very influential in American occultism and bringing the Eastern philosophies out here. But she said this in 1886. I have it zoomed in here, but she said, telepathy, as it is now called, is the communicating of thought or idea from mind to mind. This is a branch of occultism, a part of which is known to the modern investigator. But it is also one of the most useful and one of the greatest powers we have. To make it of service, many things have to combine. While it is used every day in a common life in the average way, for men are each moment telepathically communicating, this is what she believes, to do it in perfection, that is, against obstacle and distance, is perfection of occult art. Yet it will be known one day even to the common world. And man, is that, if that's not a description of the internet 140 years ago by an occultist, I don't know what is. And what's emerging out of this, and you combine these writings from back then with the modern writings of not just New Age, but business, talking about networking, there's a book called The Seventh Sense. Network becomes the new, it's not just the sixth sense where the humans can gain these extra perceptions through a sort of transhumanistic thing, but it's also a seventh sense where a hive or a sort of conglomerate human arrives, this neo-human that is not just individuals, but a collective. And it goes back to collectivism and monism and all these ideas that are prevalent in places like the, you know, Burning Man, which I know, Justin, you're maybe going to go visit. I don't know if that was concluded yet, but these ideas are pervasive in culture. And the thing that is different about now compared to any other time in known recorded history, you know, what's generally agreed upon is like known history is the technology. And so I know we've had this sentiment of like, hey, technology is benign, it's neutral, like it's how you use it is how, and I've definitely thought that. And I think for the most part, that is true. But the more I learn and the more I get into the nitty gritty of like how computer science not just works, but just how the operating systems from the ground up were designed, the elements of control, the control mechanism of loop feedbacks of you know, what eventually became the MK Ultra experiments with the sensory sort of loops and controlling your, you know, trying to change your perceptions and emotions based on physical torture and all, you know, all the crazy stuff that they did. All that was built into the computer right from the get-go. So I don't know, guys. I'm a little disturbed in terms of like the direction this is heading, especially with the hive mind concept, not just because it's this technological thing, but because it has sociologically changed us. Like you said, Justin, the kids with their phones in front of their faces. I mean, I'm guilty too. I sit there a lot of times and I'm reading something or I'm trying to learn something at least, but I do have my phone in front of me. And so the danger with the combination of not just the tech, but the social media aspect is where the hive mind is really becoming palpable. Not just, you know, it's not just like a groupthink anymore. It's like with the technology in our hand, we are agreeing about something. And that collective notion is very interesting. And it's going to be a very dangerous thing in the next decade as the technocracy becomes established and techno-populism becomes a real issue, as well as techno-spiritualism. Everything's becoming techno in this next decade. And so I think that's why we're here talking about all this.
The religious aspect is what gets my attention. Like I tend to kind of, I kind of lean towards the most extreme side of how this is going to play out religiously, you know, with the spiritual side of everything. But when you talk about the hive, this hive mind, this collective, I remember back in early 2000s, there was a program on PBS. I think I might've mentioned this on Canary Cry Radio, but anybody can Google this. There was a program that came out called The Worldwide Mind. And PBS, as liberal as they are, they had the whole good cop, bad cop routine. You know, they've got a guy that's like so far crazy transhumanist. And then they've got this other guy that represents like the average conservative American Joe. And they kind of go back and forth, good cop, bad cop, so that by the time they're done completely conditioning you that you need this cloud. They didn't call it a cloud, by the way. Okay. This was way before we even knew what the heck a cloud was. But they were selling this idea that there was coming a day, they were already working on the networking for it and these supercomputers that were going to be powering this worldwide mind, this hive, this collective. And if we have the hardwire or the we're not hardwired, but it's like if we're networked into this thing, and I don't remember the exact language, but the gist of it was if we're networked in via microchip, via frequency, whatever you're, you know, however you're connected to this thing, you can download a language instantaneously. Like you speak Chinese now. Gons, I could be having a like you could be laying in bed with your wife and I could just like whisper in your brain, Gons. Gons. Hey, Gons. That's
terrifying.
Are you there, Gons? I mean, that's how creepy this is. We can communicate with this. But then you made another statement about telepathy. And I don't want to go on a tangent here. You know, the popular mega church out there in California that everybody has, goodness, all the headlines about Bethel Church, the Destiny cards and all this other crazy stuff that's been going on there. Their children's pastor put out a video on his Facebook Live saying that every baby can be communicated with telepathically by its parents. Like it's actually something we need to learn how to do because your babies are born with their it's like they have a mature spirit, but they haven't learned how to communicate on this planet, right?
Yeah.
And so as a parent, and his name's Seth Dahl, by the way, I'm not making this up if anybody's watching this and they think this is just totally crazy. This is the children's pastor at Bethel Redding, California. He says that he telepathically communicates with his infants and that he encourages other parents to do this. Are you recommending, Gons, that there's an element of telepathy that's possibly this psychic part of our brain that gets activated by technology and all of this? Where are you going to go with that?
Yeah, I think what they're going to do is, in part of this, and I just pulled this up because this is so relevant, and I know we don't want to go too far down any given rabbit trail, but there was an article that was published by ABC titled Telepathic Communication, Just a Matter of Time as Twins Reveal Blueprint for Brain Interface. And it's a conjoined twin. These two girls have their heads are fused together. That's how they were born. But they have like, you know, they're able to share experiences. They're able to share kind of, you know, the tastes and you know, things they crave or their thirst or things like that. And that is the key here. It's electric signaling. We're all just electric signals, remember? So what's going to start happening is now they've already done it. They've already mapped or tried to map parts of rats' brains and stuff, and they're able to show the electrical pulses that are taking place in the brain. They've even created a whole procedure to go through and digitize that brain into the cloud. So yes, rat brains are already in the cloud. And so I think what they're going to start doing is not just digitizing it, but the thing that's really creepy in the most cutting edge research, it's not necessarily implants. You know, we've always talked about microchips and implants and stuff. They're talking about, we're not going to need any invasive stuff. We're going to be able to use the silicon type of infusion technology, and we're going to be able to get the kind of reading and, you know, the back and forth interaction electrically that we need via the brain. So I think that there's already tons of technology being made to do this, but the implications are so crazy, because if you start thinking about memories, right? They already implanted a memory in a rat or something. Can you imagine if we're sharing memories or sharing experiences? These are going to become normal types of things where the celebrity culture will completely change, because you know people want to live vicariously through them, through experiences and things like that. It's going to be a whole different world. And so, yeah, I think communication at that supernatural level, that's that spirituality side. And then the technology is going to show it. It's going to help facilitate some of that, you know. And for example, like the digitization of the rat's brain, they were able to literally take a piece of flesh and map it out digitally, completely from top to bottom. And now they have a digital version of a brain that they're able to effectively give it new memories or transfer that information to another rat across the country with memories and things like that. So, you know, it's pretty invasive towards our minds. And that's the biggest thing here is this is an assault, not just on the body, but the mind. They have to assault the mind first before they can really assault the body. And I think that's what we're seeing, especially, you know, with the breakdown of the family and the transgenderism and all these issues. It's all to break everything down to create something new. And again, that's something that someone like Julian Huxley talked about in the 1940s, that we're going to purposely create tension across the political and social and education and economic and everything so that a new thing would emerge and a collective new humanity will emerge. And that's kind of what they're going for. But the religious side of it is certainly a big vehicle. And I think we need to have that discussion, because the church, the church is ignorant right now of the topic. They just don't know. Yeah. They're going forward with the tech without any sort of checks and balances. They're just kind of keeping going with the culture, and that's a huge trap, because that is a huge part of the New World Order system, the UNESCO system. It was the three-pronged approach: education, science, and culture. So,
speaking of the religious side of it, guns. Just a few weeks before our conference in September, again dealing with transhumanism in the hybrid age. By the way, it's at the Branson. It's at the Mansion Theater in Branson, Missouri. And also, live streaming is available right now. You can go on gen6.com to get your live streaming ticket. You sign up for live streaming now for this year's conference, and you get last year's conference for free immediately. But just a few weeks before our conference, there's a Faith, Technology, and the Future conference that is being put on by the Christian Transhumanist Society. It's a Christian transhumanist conference.
Right.
They're literally preempting our conference with their own. And these aren't futurists. These aren't secularists. These aren't humanists. These are so-called Christians who are far worse than ignorant concerning the question of transhumanism. These guys are, complicit in the accepting of what transhumanism teaches in terms of mixing it into their theology. And I've seen a lot of this, and I'm sure you guys have seen a lot of this too. These mega churches are already primed. And when I say mega churches, I think everybody thinks the same handful of churches are already primed to amalgamate the doctrine of transhumanism into their watered down version of the gospel. The stage is already set for this to take place. This conference, their main speaker at this conference is Aubrey de Grey, who is a scientist who's working to end aging. He wants to defeat death and find a cure for aging. And he's a very famous guy and doing a lot of work to try and defeat death. So I think it was you, Josh, that mentioned one of the spokespersons for transhumanism that you interviewed was driving around in a coffin to try and get the word out about transhumanism, to try and proselytize the doctrine of transhumanism. Really, that coffin is can be used to accurately depict the problem that we have, which is the human condition. The problem that the human race has is sin and death. We are in a state of extreme genetic degeneration. We are not Adam. We all want to be Adam again, hence the all of the superhero movies that are coming out and so forth. This is, as you said correctly, Josh, this is transhumanism in our face. These are people who have been genetically enhanced in most cases. Most of these superheroes are genetically enhanced, and they represent, in a way, psychologically for us, they represent Adam. They represent what we once were, what we long to be again. I believe that every human being is secretly longing to be Adam again. And so this desire to defeat death, the desire to overcome aging and defeat death has been the deepest and most profound longing of the human race all the way back to the offspring of Adam, all the way back to Adam himself after suffering the consequence of sin, which is death. And death is a consequence of sin. Death is our condition. Death is our fault. And not just death, entropy. Entropy and death are our fault. We brought death into the world. The Bible says that through one man, death, sin and death entered the world. And it's through one man is the rectification of sin and death. And it's not Aubrey de Grey. It's Jesus. And so this effort to defeat death, this effort to overcome aging is a circumvention of the cross of Christ. It is a circumvention of the rectification of the human condition, which is the resurrection. The resurrection is the rectification of the human condition, period. And any attempt to rectify the human condition, I'm not talking about curing diseases. I'm not talking about increasing lifespans. Using technology, I'm talking about becoming something other than human in order to circumvent the human condition, circumvent death, circumvent the cross of Christ and the resurrection. That's really what transhumanism is about. And any believer that embraces the doctrine of transhumanism has forfeited the doctrine of Christ, period, and cannot be considered a believer, because Paul said that our hope as believers is the resurrection. That is our hope as believers. In fact, Paul says that if Christ was not raised from the dead, we are to be most pitied among men, because our hope is in the resurrection. The hope of a believer is not in this life. It's not in extending his life. It's not in curing aging or any of that. We understand that we are bearing Adam. We wear Adam. We bear the consequence, the ramifications of sin, which are death. And that all of us will die, even those of us who have embraced the cross. Why? Why will we die? Because we're still wearing Adam. That's what the resurrection's for. We die because we're wearing the first Adam. We will live eternally because we're going to put on the second Adam, the last Adam. That's the resurrection. And the doctrine of Christ, the doctrine of atonement, and the resurrection in Christ is what is most lacking in churches today. The foundational pillars of what the early church believed, the crucifixion of Christ, the fact that he was buried and raised on the third day, the fact that he ascended to the Father, and the fact that there is a resurrection, the hope of the believer, the resurrection for those who are in Christ. This is the gospel of Jesus Christ, and this is what is not being preached in most churches. So the churches are being primed to accept a counterfeit resurrection, a counterfeit gospel with a circumvention of the cross of Christ, a circumvention of the resurrection to live eternally through the mechanism of transhumanism, through the mechanism of transhumanism, because transhumanism is It's not just a philosophy. Transhumanism is a transition. It is a transition that takes us from being human through transhuman to the ultimate goal, which is post-human. Post-humanism is the end game. And understand that post-humanism means that to be post-human is to forfeit your candidacy for salvation. What makes you eligible to receive the gift of God, the eligibility to receive the gift of God, is the fact that you are a human being. If you are something other than human, then our kinsman, human redeemer, it no longer qualifies for you. The cross of Christ is annulled for you if you forfeit your humanity. That's what ought to be being preached from the pulpit, not this acceptance of transhumanism, not this desire to defeat death through other means. Again, I'm not against curing diseases and doing things that don't change the trademarks of human being. That's where the danger comes, because the only way, and I'll kick it back to you guys, the only way to circumvent the human condition, to circumvent the resurrection, is to become something other than human. Because herein lies, in this body and in your bodies, herein lies the curse of sin, which is death. Our hope is in the resurrection. And that is, as I said, what ought to be reinforced right now in every church across this nation and across the earth, to shore up, to relay that foundation of the gospel, which has been little by little over the years gradually broken apart and destroyed by these various movements, so-called movements within Christianity.
You're absolutely right. And isn't it interesting that even the transhumanists know, for any hope of eternal life or immortality, however they want to phrase it, they have to become something other than human. Isn't that interesting? Because they could have phrased their whole movement differently. They could have said, no, we're still human, but we're the true human. We're the human that is supposed to be. You know, it's not human to die. It's not human to do any, to degrade and be subject to entropy and all that. They know that, they know within themselves intrinsically, they know that that's wrong. They have to become something different than human in order to gain what they would say is immortality, or what we would say is eternal life. You know, we as Christians, we know that the only hope in eternal life is through Jesus Christ, and we will never get it in humanity. It's strange that the transhumanists know that too. But what's also interesting is that they forgot what the definition of human is, and they forgot what morality is. We can generally agree on a lot of the same points of morality. You know, a lot of the more transhumanists or secularists fall back on ancient Greek philosophy and stuff like that, you know, like the non-aggression principle and stuff like that. So we can meet them on their own terms. So let's say, you know, a human being can be defined in a broad sense, you know, pretty simply. You know, the dictionary says this: a man, woman, or child of the species Homo sapiens, distinguished from other animals by superior mental development, power of articulate speech, and upright stance. Okay, now, you know, part of being human is, we're made in the image of God and all that, but let's meet them on their own ground. Let's say, okay, they don't believe in that, fine. We can meet them on their own ground with logic and reason. The majority of transhumanist goals, if they were actually successfully carried out, they would not fit with that definition, or rather, they would actually surpass it. So Homo sapiens now, compared to other animals, they're considered to have superior mental development. However, one of the goals of transhumanism is to increase that development to a state far surpassing what's possible for mere Homo sapiens. So we now have the power of articulate speech, yet something like uploading a person into, like Gans mentioned, a global brain or a hive mind or something like that is available. The speech that would be available in that environment would no longer be articulate or even understandable to a normal Homo sapien, to people like you and I. Even the idea of upright stance would be a moot point in a virtual environment. But this is why this is why I think transhumanists explain transhumanism as a directed evolution from Homo sapiens to something new, you know, improved, enhanced, and totally different. The type of being that they're referring to that's going towards this directed, you know, with this directed evolution thing is called homo superior, or, you know, that's when you see the lowercase h with the plus sign at the end of it, that's what it's referring to. Or sometimes it's called homo futuris, or, you know, futurist. But one of the more troubling things about that concept is how this is going to be done and what it means for the rest of humanity. And even on their own terms, it goes against the non-aggression principle. So much of transhumanism relies on the implementation of genetic editing, and we're seeing that a lot today. So basically, in a nutshell, the idea, for those who might not be familiar and are just brand new to this topic, the idea is that a person can alter their genes or DNA to enhance their overall biology, and that's being done today through biohacking, just in people's garages and stuff. Now, this would greatly reduce the limitations of human biology. You know, certain enhancements might include, you know, maybe starting off with small things like giving people super strength or night vision, but could also be as extreme as possible immortality or an immunity to every known disease. And now, while those are certainly, you know, tempting outcomes, there's no way to know what the future ramifications of those enhancements might be. So one definite and unavoidable consequence to transhumanism is the passing down of edited or enhanced genes through your generations. If a person alters their genes and they have children, that gets passed down. Now, this means eventually a world could conceivably exist where the choice to conceive human children with a human partner would be totally removed, thereby forcing the transhuman agenda on the rest of the human population against their will. And this is something that I don't think a lot of transhumanists really think out, because most of them say that they're not totalitarian. Everybody can do what they want. You know, they're more social liberals and that type of thing. Everybody can do what they want, but they don't realize that if they are successful in their goals, they're taking our choice away for future generations. You know, it might be defined as merely like a personal choice today, but that's only valid for at the most one generation at most. So, for example, we could compare it to like getting a tattoo. You know, I got a few of them myself. It's a personal choice, okay? But if a tattooed person has a baby, you know, I have three, four, one on the way. They're not born with tattoos. You know, that choice was my own choice, and it's not passed down in the generation. So a baby's not also born with tattoos. Now, with transhumanism, the future generation has no choice, and once that choice is made for them, there's no going back. A human superior baby could never grow up and decide to be a homo sapien, even if there is, even if they morally disagree with what transhumanism has done to their biological makeup. I mean, even we as Christians offer that choice to humanity. If you don't want to be a Christian, fine, then you don't have to be a Christian. And there's a lot more I could say about that, but I don't want to take up the whole conversation. But I'll just say real quick that, you know, also a homo superior or a post-human, it's not just created out of thin air. A homo sapien is needed to create a post-human or a transhuman or a homo superior, which means for the addition of every homo superior, one homo sapien is lost. And over time, those two factors, one being the shrinking homo sapien gene pool and the loss of existing homo sapiens being the second, it would eventually result in a complete species eradication, and that's known as speciesicide. Now, while the great evil of genocide is defined as, quote, the deliberate and systematic extermination of a national, racial, political, or cultural group, end quote, speciesicide in the context of what we're talking about today is the actual extinction of an entire human species. It goes beyond genocide. And I would think that if transhumans were consistent, and I'm speaking generally, but if they were consistent in their own ideology and their own ideas, if they would follow it out to the ultimate outcome, they would realize, okay, in order for us to have our little movement here and plan it out to fruition, that speciesicide. There's just no way around it. Eventually, it's going to reach a tipping point on Earth where humans, Homo sapiens, do not have a choice anymore. And there's good reason to believe that possibly that's what's being talked about in a lot of the Book of Revelation. So I'll turn it back to you guys.
Yeah, let me just comment on immortality real quick, Josh. You start throwing words like that around and people instantly, conspiracy theory meter goes off in their head. The truth of the matter is, immortality that might be found in this life, it's still temporary, because once the Great Tribulation is done, you know, I mean, look, things are going to happen during the Great Tribulation. The Bible is very, very clear.
Yes.
And during this time period, I mean, there's going to be some things that are going to come to fruition during this time period that are not going to happen before this time period. Like there are things they are predestined for this time period.
You can even meet the secularists on their own terms, you know, because and I fully agree with that. And every Christian should agree with that. But if you're debating with a transhumanist or a secularist, you can still make the same point and say, well, look, even on your own scientific terms, the universe is either going to suffer heat death or a freeze death. One of two things. Eventually, maybe it takes billions of years, but because of the expansion of the universe, eventually everything's going to freeze and die. Where's your technology then? Nothing can survive in that environment. Or the Higgsfield doomsday, and that's a whole other thing. But basically, which could happen at any second, the universe becomes a true vacuum where particles can't even exist and everything gets ripped to shreds. If people want more information on that, check out Joe Licken's presentation on the Higgsfield doomsday. By their own standards, they know no matter what technology you develop, it can't sustain that, because what they theorize is actual particle eradicating forces and processes. No technology can surpass it. So you're absolutely right. For the Christian, yes, we got tribulation, we got prophecy, we have all this stuff that we know is going to happen from the Book of Revelation and Daniel and all that. But for a secularist who doesn't believe in those things, the point I think is even more clear, that based on their so-called science, this is all going to end someday. You're going to die. It doesn't matter if you live 100 years or a billion years. You're going to die. You're going to cease to exist physically. What next?
But if God does allow any type of, we'll just say, presumed immortality, because I think that's what it's going to be. Right. These transhumanists, they're going to be able to access certain technologies, right? And I think we get a little clear glimpse of this in Scripture, because when you go to Revelation 9:6, I'm just going to read this for everybody here. And in those days shall men seek death and shall not find it, and they shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. So there's something very peculiar about this passage. Some shift is going to take place. Now, I believe it has to do with transhumanism. Now, I want to get everybody's opinion on this if we have time. I think that there's something that's going to take place. There will be a shift that takes place, physical/spiritual shift that takes place, which will affect mankind in the tribulation. And again, I don't mean Christians, and I don't want to get into eschatology. Everybody's got a different opinion on that. But the Bible is very clear. There will be elect on the earth during the tribulation. So whether, you know, everybody has a different view of who those elect are, I think we all know, we all have our own views on that. But regardless of who the elect are on the earth, there will be Christians, born-again Christians on the earth in the tribulation. They will not take this transhumanism. They will not have anything to do with it, and they're not going to try to kill themselves. But for those who do take part in the beast system, okay, those who go through whatever this looks like, and I can't paint a picture, I don't know what it's going to look like, but something's going to happen where they will want to seek death and they can't find it. They will not be able to kill themselves. As for right now, people just go out, you know, go out back and you know, pull out a gun or take a bunch of pills. I mean, right now there's a suicide rate. There's coming a time where man won't be able to kill themselves, according to what I'm reading in Scripture. Now, Timothy, let me jump to you real quick on this.
Well, I think that certainly that there are technologies that are under development right now in synthetic biology and biotechnology that are going to create all kinds of scenarios. I mean, people are talking about nanotech bodies. People are talking about extreme forms of cybernetics. So certainly, these technologies are underway, they're under development, they are going to emerge in the consumer market shortly. This is one of the drastic changes that we're going to see in our lifetime, and that our children, I've got four boys, by the way, our children are going to deal with, is this emerging market for human modification, for the alteration of human biology, whether it be on a genetic, whether it be on a genetic level, whether it be using nanotechnology, whether it be cybernetics, artificial intelligence, or integrating a technology into your biology. And this is going, it's going to create a scenario in which people are going to be forfeiting the traditional meat sack of human flesh, and they're going to attempt to upload their consciousness to machines. I don't think, I'm not convinced that a machine can have a consciousness of its own. I'm not convinced that the singularity is possible, the singularity as it pertains to Ray Kurzweil's theory. However, I do think that there might be, it might be possible to a degree, to move consciousness into a synthetic body. And that's underway. There's all kinds of experimentation happening there. What we have not yet seen is the consumer market. And the reason why we haven't seen the consumer market yet is for two reasons. Number one, the technologies are still developing. Right now, we're witnessing the convergence of what are called the GRIN technologies, genetics, robotics, artificial intelligence, nanotechnology, and I would throw in cybernetics. These technologies are converging. They are converging. And the convergence of these technologies are going to make possible the conscious evolution, the directed evolution of the human race. Generally speaking, through biotechnology and also synthetic biology. And synthetic biology in the sense that people can create new life forms. Now, college, high school students are already creating new life forms, single-celled organisms that do different things. Like there was a competition a couple of years ago to among the high schools, which high school, and it was all over the world, could create the most interesting, the most useful synthetic, new synthetic life form. And I believe the winner of that particular year was a single cell organism that could eat. I'm trying to think of a word. The asbestos or whatever it's called, the dangerous substance that gets into your lungs and gives people all kinds of respiratory problems. So high school students are already creating synthetic life. And so if you can create synthetic biology, if you can create a new life form, we're going to be able to rebuild biology, to mold biology, to direct the evolution of other species, but also our own evolution, not in the Darwinian sense, not in the sense of survival of the fittest. This isn't a natural process. Directed evolution is not Darwin. Directed evolution is Nietzsche, Friedrich Nietzsche, right. The will to power. And it is the kind of evolution that the transhumanists embrace. They don't embrace survival of the fittest. Screw that. They are subscribing to Nietzschean philosophy, which I'm going to be talking about at the conference. And so the objective is going to be, just like these Christian transhumanists are dealing with this year, in this month, at the end of this month, in their conference, how do we defeat aging? How do we defeat death? Well, the problem is here. The problem is Adam. Adam is dying. Adam is degenerating. Not only are we all going to die, we are all sorry excuses of human beings to begin with compared to our progenitor, Adam. And so we have a problem. We wear it. And the ultimately, we're going to be able to make modifications to our flesh. We already can to a degree. There's a misconception out there that we're living longer and healthier. We're not. We're actually not. We're living slightly longer than our predecessors. If you subtract the infant mortality rate from the 20th century. Take out the infant mortality rate, the children that were dying at birth or up until 2 or 3 years old. Subtract that out of the equation. They were dying for all kinds of reasons that no longer occurs because we fixed those issues. Take that out of the equation, and we're only living slightly longer with all of our technology than our predecessors. However, we have way more diseases today than they did, certainly way more genetic disorders than they did. In fact, we have more than 10,000 genetic mutations, deleterious genetic mutations in the human genome, more than 10,000. So you tell me, do we repair this thing or do we try to build a synthetic body and transfer our consciousness into that thing? And I think ultimately repairing this body is only going to get us so far, and we're going to have to resort to transferring our consciousness or building some kind of a synthetic body or something along, becoming something other than human is basically what it boils down to, as Josh was saying. That's where this is going. So those entities, those creatures that we create, either to try and house our own consciousness in there, or some kind of a nanotech body or something. There's all kinds of crazy things that are being dreamt up now by the futurists. If we succeed in creating some kind of an artificial suit, instead of this suit, we create an artificial suit, a synthetic suit. We put our consciousness into that suit. The question is, does the soul go with it? I don't know. Nobody knows. But I think the consciousness can go. And then what happens? And then you might be getting into, this is a very long winded answer to your question, to Justin, but then we might be getting into a scenario where you've screwed around with the blueprint and now you've created hell on earth for yourself and others who are in your situation, who maybe moved their consciousness into this this synthetic life form, and people are probably thinking, oh, that's crazy, that can't happen. Well, then you answer me, how is it that demonic beings, sentient entities, can inhabit your body with you, right? How do they get in there with you? And not just one or two, we're talking legion, 400, 500, if we can take that literally, which I think is probably pretty accurate. Hundreds of sentient entities. These aren't just Casper the Ghost. These are sentient beings that once had flesh and are disembodied. So that disembodied thing that is still them, that consciousness, can go inside of your body. So if the consciousness of a disembodied, basically the offspring of the Watchers, can enter your body, then why can't your consciousness go into a synthetic body? And I think they're inhabiting the same space, to be honest with you. I think that demons and the human soul, whatever you want to call consciousness, they're inhabiting the same dimension together. And so I do think, again, I do not think that the singularity is possible, that machines are going to become self-aware and conscious to the degree that we are. But I do believe that synthetic biology is possible. And I do believe that the human being, the consciousness of a human being, just like the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim, can be transferred into a synthetic life form. And there, that may be the key to understanding, Justin, what you're talking about, how it is that death will escape them, will escape those who have done this for many reasons. And that's a terrifying prospect if life on earth becomes hell on earth.
Yeah, I'm gonna let jump
me
in.
John, let me clear something up real fast before you comment. When I bring up Revelation and I start talking about all the stuff that's gonna happen, I just want to make it really clear. Obviously, like I don't believe the Christians are gonna be here when God's wrath is poured out over the whole earth. I definitely believe in a pre-wrath, and I don't want to give the wrong impression. I don't believe we're gonna be here when wrath comes down. But my point was, based on the timeline of events, things are cooking up to that point. And I think God's going to allow these wicked men waxing worse and worse, seducing, deceiving, and being deceived, right? I believe he's going to allow them to seduce and to continue to get worse and worse. And their technology is going to get greater and greater, giving them this goal of finally not being able to die for a season. And I think that's the season that the wrath is going to get poured out. And so basically they've kind of dug their own grave, and it's kind of like now they're going to lay in it. You know, they're going to suffer. I just want to clear that up. I hate even having to bring that up, but eschatology can confuse people, and I didn't want to create any confusion on that. But Gons, please chime in.
Well, I was just going to jump in, and I think most of this conversation can be summarized or parsed out by looking at Romans 8. And in verse 5 and 6, for those who live according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh, and those who live according to the Spirit set their minds on the things of the Spirit. For those For to set the mind on the flesh is death, but to set the mind on the spirit is life and peace. It's a passage we, you know, we hear about all the time. We hear it in church and whatnot. But if you apply it to this topic, it becomes quite profound, because if you look at the pursuit of transhumanism, of the hive mind, all these things, it is a flesh pursuit. It's predicated on humanism. It's predicated on the scientific inquiry and what we've, extracted from the data that we've, you know, gathered from human biology, from human testing and measuring and all these things that we've done. And, you know, I think the thing that Tim's getting at with this notion of, this assault and this alternative thing that they're trying to usurp God and usurp the cross, really, that's the heart of it. But people don't really see it that way. You know, that's a really hard road to get to. I'm hoping the folks that are Christian transhumanists, the people that maybe are introduced to the idea through them, because they're much more culturally relevant. I mean, they got like the Mormon transhumanist there. They got like a lesbian person and a theology people from Princeton. And they got they got a lot of academic people there. So it's possible that your average Christian might hear about transhumanism through a group like Christian Transhumanism first. But my hope is that, you know, if you're a Christian and you've been taught sort of the basic tenets of Christianity, my hope is that people will see sort of the reality of like, wait a minute, this is a religion. This is a new religion that they're pushing, because it's totally spiritual. They are tackling the big question: where do we come from? Why are we here? Where are we going? And if those issues are being tackled through the flesh, then here's what we have. We have transhumanism. We have this crazy hive mind thing that I think they're building. And, one of the things, a lot of these issues with, like, you know, Josh brought up, like, hey, we have a personal choice right now. Like, you know, I'm going to tap myself up like a heretic like Josh is. I'm just joking. I'm totally joking. I joke around with Josh a lot. So anyway, but I think this is going to, the part that's not discussed and the part that has blinded the church especially is the culture, because culture is such a huge element. And I think this is it was very apparent in the recent discussion with Carl Tykrib on Canary Cry Radio, talking about Burning Man, talking about how their theme is iRobot. The whole tech industry has had a close tie with Silicon Valley and the psychedelic movement of the 90s, which has its ties to the CIA and all the 60s freedom movement and all this stuff. It's all part of the same movement. And if you look at their documents, you look at what they wrote, and they're very explicit that this cannot work unless it is based on humanism. It cannot be based on, it can have different tenets. It can have it can be Islam, it can be Christianity, it can be, Hindu, whatever, but it has to have a humanistic tenet that we are all coming together. We are all improving. We are all going in the same direction, which is, up, ascending. That notion has to become very prevalent to society, and that's not going to happen. I think that is going to happen more as some of these communication technologies become even more crazy. And I think the big thing that we need to look for is this topic of empathy. For me personally, I'm not as empathetic. My wife is super empathetic. She has a gift. She's able to kind of sense people, just by looking at them. If you look at it technologically, what is all that stuff based on at an empirical level? At an empirical level, we're talking about blood, blood pressure rising, pupil dilating, heart rate changing, skin tone change, like little physiological differences that can now be measured and that can now be fully sort of transmitted into a data set, and then other people can experience it. And you start talking about, having those sorts of empathetic moments of, hey, we're trying to understand each other through this technology. Now you have this hive mind thing where you start messing with your own thinking. That's where all the sensory, that the flesh, when you're going at it from the flesh outside in, you're going to mess up the spirit, the soul inside, like Tim was talking about. And I think that's the point here, and the warning that's been in the scriptures all along with Revelation 13 and just the whole big, mythological spin, that the craziness that we read about in the book of Revelation and Daniel and things like that. It seems so radical and crazy, but now it just seems like it's happening, and it's all predicated on these technologies and human imagination. That's a big tenet. You look at the Tower of Babel. It's a point I always bring up, but I think it's so pertinent. The reason why God stopped the Tower of Babel, one reason was that, you know, they would do whatever they imagined to do, that anything they imagined to do will be possible. So all of a sudden, with this technology, anything we imagine to do is now possible. You know, it literally is. You can create virtual worlds. You can become whoever by, you know, putting on an avatar, whatever. But it completely separates you, the person, from your body. And it is a pseudo spirituality that's very pervasive. I think it's going to be that whole notion of the spiritual part is going to become the next phase of how culturally this is going to draw people in. And again, as we've talked about in this discussion that many of you guys have brought up, the church, I'm hoping a lot of people that are introduced to this, like if like a super hardcore Christian transhumanist walked into like a fairly mega church, I'm hoping there's some people in there that are like, I don't know, I feel like there's something more to this, and maybe find, you know, some of our work and maybe think, oh, maybe there's a better explanation from this, not even using eschatology, just from a philosophical standpoint of, you know, refuting the basic tenets of materialism and reductionism, and bringing it back to Josh, how he started off with nihilism. You know, I always take it back to if you're logical about your atheistic worldview and materialistic reductionism, you're going to end up with, you're going to land in nihilism, which means that anything that you deem as meaningful or purposeful is categorically a delusion. It's an illusion. It's something that you're making up to occupy time until you go away. So, I mean, if you believe that, then all you have is to sustain this, whatever this is. And so it makes sense to try to build, you know, eternity, living forever, defeat death, all these aspects that are, you know, the promises of God through the cross, through Jesus Christ. Well, now we're in this age, just like it was in the days of Noah, where humans have the technology at their fingertips to try to do the same thing that God already did on the cross. So, yeah, I mean, it all goes back to, you know, some of the stuff Tim talked about. But I just wanted to throw that in because there's so many different layers to this. And I think we're doing a good job covering all of it just in this short discussion. But yeah, I hope people come to the conference and they're able to see that, like, there's a lot to this. This isn't just a you know, a Marvel comic superhero propaganda type thing. There's a lot more to it. Just it's kind of the eugenics topic that you guys brought up too, that Josh mentioned. Have you guys seen the movie Storks?
No.
Nope.
Okay. It's an animated movie for kids. You know, it's kind of fun, whatever, the storks that delivers the babies, except there's one glaring, disturbing part of this whole movie. The main corporation or whatever is a giant factory machine thing that creates babies. Hmm. Like the babies that were being delivered to the families that, you know, couldn't have children or brothers or sisters or whatever. It was just babies being created out of a factory. So, I mean,
it sounds like something I would watch being 35 years old, single with no kid. I'm sorry, man.
Well, being 35 years old and having younger children and having seen it, that was I was trying to enjoy the movie, but it was a little hard when they were like, oh, the machine turns on and now it's spitting out hundreds of babies. What are you going to do with all these babies? So anyway, I'm sorry. Kind of rabbit trail. Go ahead.
No, you mentioned Blavatsky, and I think a good kind of sum up point here would be kind of going back to what Aleister Crowley said. And for those who don't know Aleister Crowley, you know, he called himself the Beast. He's probably one of the most, if not the most influential black magician occult fathers of our lifetime. Like, granted, he's long gone now, but when you consider all his works and all of his spells and just, I can't put into words the magnitude of some of these things. People wouldn't even know if they haven't studied, but Crowley, you know, majorly influenced Jack Parsons, L. Ron Hubbard, Led Zeppelin, I mean, Black Sabbath, the list goes on. Don't have time to break it all down. But, his religion, Thelema, one of his religions, Thelema, he defines in that religion what magic is. And I think this is really telling. Basically, it's causing change to occur in conformity with your will. And, you know, his number one commandment, if you want to call it that, is, you know, do what you want. Do what thou wilt. Shall be the whole of the law. It's all about you, self, causing, you know, causing change to manifest based on what you will. And witchcraft is very much, you know, delving into that same idea of manifesting your will into reality, basically. Lots of different types of occult movements have kind of spawned from all this over the years. But I bring that up to say that's what transhumanism is doing. They're literally trying to manifest their will through technology, and it's a form of magic. And again, how far are they going to get? I don't know in our lifetime. I think it's very important that we keep an eye on this. We're being conditioned in TV shows, cartoons for kids, movies for kids, such as Storks. When we did the episode of Into the Multiverse, when Timothy and Josh and I did that, we talked about this X-Men episode where that blue creature, Nightcrawler. And you can Google this, Nightcrawler, the gospel. And it's crazy because Nightcrawler gets saved. I mean, not really saved, but they're giving the idea that Nightcrawler saved and he's trying to evangelize Wolverine. Very demented. And then they go into this whole universalist, every faith is all worshiping the same God, even though they're holding a Bible, right? We are being conditioned for a time that is coming upon the face of the earth. And I think it's very important that we are on top of our game here, that we know what's going on, and that we know what the Word of God says, most importantly. It's the Word of God that allows us to have clarity in times of so much confusion. That's our absolute truth, is the Word of God. And we've mentioned kind of in passing how this is a religion. And I'm hoping that one of the topics we're going to be able to discuss on the panel is the ramifications, the religious ramifications, but not just the ramifications, but what it will look like as a religion. How this is going to appeal to everyone of every faith, including those claiming to be of Christ, right? And how this technology could potentially deal with affecting what they call the mind's eye or the pineal gland, which is what a lot of the hallucinogenic drugs, and I think I've said this on Canary Cry before, but I don't think hallucinogenic drugs are just that simple. I don't think it's a matter of just getting high. Like, oh, I just took some drugs and I had, you know, I saw an entity. No, no. I think that a lot of these drugs, whether they be synthetic or natural occurring, I do believe that a lot of these so-called hallucinogens are actually sacred drugs meant to access the spirit realm. And I'm hoping that we have time to talk about that on the panel. That's something that I got into quite a bit in my thesis in psychology, and how transhumanism and transgenics, I believe, are going to tie right into the synthetic religion of the last days. But we all have different ideas of how this is all going to play out. But the interesting thing is that it's all going to end in fire, according to the Bible, because if you're not with Christ, you're going to get quenched in the fire eventually. And there's going to be hell to pay. And it's my desire that people like us can sound the alarm and be watchmen to try to warn people. And I know that non-believers, we can't just go to them and say, this is what the Bible says. I mean, granted, we have to preach the gospel to them, but they want some peer-reviewed research. And it's like, well, look, let's take your peer-reviewed research and let's compare it to what scripture says. You know, I mean, that's you get to a certain point where that's sometimes the best thing you could possibly do for some of these guys. But I pray for discernment in these times, because it's really hard to get through to some of these people, especially some of these Christian, so-called Christian transhumanists that you guys have talked about. It blows my mind. But I know we're almost out of time. Timothy, I'm going to pass that over to you.
Yeah, you know, the topic of my presentation in Branson this year is going to be what I call apotheotheism, the evolution of a new religion. And it's a new religion for the new hybrid age. And it's unfolding before us at this, in this very moment. It's maturating in the Christian church, or the so-called Christian church, the mega churches, the emergent churches. Many of the charismatic churches are now beginning to pick up the transhumanism, the theme of transhumanism, but not as a topic of concern, but rather are already beginning to adopt the doctrine of transhumanism. It's happening. It's happening at an exceedingly rapid pace. And so that's why we're doing this conference this year. We want to prepare people. We want to make sure that people are equipped. And that's specifically why we're doing this next gen panel. What everybody has heard on this a panel tonight on this digital version of what we're doing at the conference live is just the beginning of the things that we're going to be getting into. We have a list of topics that we're going to hit that is much broader than what we've talked about today. We're going to have Owen Schroyer with us, and it's going to be extremely dynamic. It's going to be epic. And we want to make sure that we're thinking about not only what's happening in our time, but more importantly, what's going to be happening in our kids, in the age that our kids are going to grow up in the epoch that our children are growing up in, which is the Aeon of Horus, by the way. And so the True Legends Conference is from the 14th through the 16th of September. You can do early registration on the 13th. That Thursday, the 13th is a Thursday, and Steve Quayle is going to be doing a book signing. If you want to get a book signed and register early, which I recommend people do, because there's going to be a lot of people. There's going to be 3,000 people converging at the Mansion Theater on the 14th. So it's Friday the 14th, and then it's Saturday the 15th, and then Sunday the 16th of September. The Next Gen panel is going to be taking place on Saturday. And where I think at this point we're sold out of physical tickets. You can go to gen6.com. That's gensix.com. If you want to go to the conference, if you want to see if there's a ticket left, I don't think there is, but you can check. But certainly you can sign up for live streaming. And as I said earlier, the live streaming for this conference, when you sign up for this year's live streaming, you automatically get access to all the sessions from last year's conference. In other words, you get last year's conference for free. Sign up for this year's conference live streaming. You get to watch last year's conference for free on the website on gen6.com after you create your account. So it's going to be dynamic. It's going to be a very powerful time. We have, aside from our Next Gen panel, we have obviously Steve Quayle, and myself from Gen 6 Productions will be presenting. We have Tom Horn and Sharon Gilbert from Skywatch TV. We have David Knight from InfoWars, who's one of our keynote speakers, will be presenting. And obviously, Owen Schroyer from InfoWars is going to be on our panel. We have we have Hugo de Garis, who we're flying in from China to be with us. Hugo de Garis is the author of The Ardalec War and one of the premier developers of artificial brains, has been one of the premier developers of artificial brains. He's coming. We have Richard Dolan from the world of ufology, who's going to be talking about some very interesting connections between ufology and transhumanism. Very, very fascinating stuff. And I can't remember who else we have, but David Langford will be with us on Sunday. And so this is going to be powerful. This is going to be an epic conference. Last year's conference was epic. This year, I guarantee, is going to be even more epic. So join us on the live stream. That's gen6.com, gensix.com. See the Next Gen panel live with all of us and Owen Schroyer. And again, we've got a whole list of topics that we didn't even touch tonight that we're going to deal with at the conference. So, gentlemen, thank you for accompanying me tonight on this digital Next Gen panel. And I look forward to being with you guys in Branson. And I know it's going to be powerful, and I know people are already excited about it.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And we will have just gotten back from Burning Man.
Yes. And we definitely want to discuss Burning Man. In fact, Justin, if you can, bring some pictures that we can display up on the big screen while we're talking.
you're going to have to blur out the background.
Yeah, I was going to say, bring some G-rated pictures, Justin, that we can display.
But I just wanted to say, we didn't want to get too much into that tonight. There were so many topics that I really wanted to talk about. But obviously, We can't dig too much into those topics that we're saving for the actual conference, but I know we've got a lot of topics to talk about there. We'll have just gotten back from Burning Man, iRobot, and there's going to be so much stuff happening. I'm really looking forward to seeing you guys out there in just a few short weeks. Josh Peck, in closing, bro, thanks for joining us.
Well, yeah, and if we got a couple minutes in closing, I'll wrap it up by making one point that, there's a question that every skeptic of transhumanist idea has, especially those who are Christians, you know, people like you and I. And I think that probably a lot of people watching are wondering the same thing. Where exactly is the line? You know, where does human biology improvement stray from acceptable to unacceptable? I mean, we have plenty of technologies and medical advances today that can, you know, cure diseases and ailments through the use of technology. So, you know, when we think about it, would somebody with a prosthetic hip be considered a transhumanist? You know, probably not. Well, what about those who receive laser eye surgery? Or what if a cure to cancer could be found through genetic editing, you know, which is currently being researched? What if a human being could be genetically edited to become completely resistant to all disease? You know, where is the line? And I want to address that before we sign off, because I do believe that a lot of people have that question. And there's been a lot of different answers offered by people throughout the years. And it seems there's no real general consensus that has been reached as of yet. So I can only really speak for myself in attempting to, you know, provide some kind of answer. My personal belief is it comes down to the difference between restoration and glorification. So is the medical treatment restoring what was once there, or is it glorifying it into something that is perceived as better? You know, and I've had a hip replacement. Is the hip replacement an attempt to restore a person's normal use of their hip, or is it an attempt to, you know, improve the bones and muscles to the point that they now can no longer break or wear down? Is the laser eye surgery restoring a normal human level of vision, or is it providing somebody with an unnatural ability to humans, like night vision or infrared vision or something like that? Is it restoring the person to normal human ability, or is it glorifying the person to superhuman ability? And that's where the line is for me, at least personally. It's found at that point where a person can no longer be considered human because they've advanced into something else, such as Homo superior, as I've talked about before during this broadcast. So going further, as a Christian, I would personally have trouble accepting anything coming close to changing myself from human into something else. I would regard that as giving up my promised inheritance of glorification from God in the life to come for an inferior human and technological glorification in this life. So, well, the fact of the matter is we're all going to have to stand before God someday. I mean, even if immortality in a physical sense were even remotely possible through, you know, technological means someday, it doesn't change that fact. Death will still occur. And I mentioned this briefly earlier. Eventually, our sun is going to burn out. Our planet will become an uninhabitable. Even if we found another planet to live on, the universe is eventually going to come to an end. Due to all the exponential expansion of the universe, a day is going to come, again, in the secularist mindset, a day is going to come when everything will be too far away from everything else to have any sort of advantageous effect. You know, basically, stars aren't going to be able to warm planets. Gravitational orbit is going to be a thing of the past, basically. The universe itself is going to die. So in the case the universe, excuse me, ends earlier than that in a, you know, massive Higgs field doomsday event, even time itself would run its course. So no matter what, you cannot escape entropy forever. Now, transhumanism is a stall at best. No matter the level of sophistication of technology, nothing can truly live forever in this life. The next life will come for each and every single one of us. I personally believe that it's wise to acknowledge that fact now and plan accordingly. We're going to be on the other side of death far longer than we've ever been on this side. And you know, maybe I'll be as lucky as to live 80 or 90 years, but after death comes, I'm going to be on the other side until the end of time and even beyond that. You know, my concern is not getting right with the technology an imperfect, flawed and human race can provide. You know, my main concern is to be right with the creator of humanity, the universe and time itself, because only that creator of those things can truly save me personally. So the good news is, for those watching is he has provided a way for salvation and he's guaranteed glorification. Now, it doesn't require government funding. It doesn't require private corporations, and it doesn't require waiting for advanced technology to be developed. It's available right now to every human being on earth. And even better, the God who saves desperately wants to give you this gift through his son today and is only waiting for you to accept it. He wants it so much, in fact, that he gave his own life for it in the form of Jesus Christ, 100% man, 100% God. It costs you nothing. The cost has already been paid. To truly prepare for the future, I would suggest asking Jesus Christ into your life today and begin believing and following him. If you do this, God, Jesus guarantees that what transhumanism can never offer, they can never guarantee that you will truly and eternally be saved. And I'll end with this, John 3:16 from the King James Version Bible. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life.
Amen. Amen. That is the most important message of the ages, of any age. Jesus Christ, that is our answer. And it's because of our love for the gospel and our love for the truth that we want to get out here and that we want to just follow the command in Ephesians 5:11 to have nothing to do with the wicked works of darkness, but rather expose them, or the King James says reprove them. I kind of like the word expose better. That's the more modern word, because that's what we do. All darkness is going to get brought to light. And that's what we do as Christians, is that we mark the false teachings, we call it out, and we try to educate people on what the truth is according to the word of God. Gons, in closing, take us out.
Well, I mean, with Josh, your analogy of enhancement versus glorification is interesting, because I have a similar measurement in discussion with people concerning the topic of transhumanism, and that is restoration versus enhancement. I think it's a good apologetic when you take it to glorification. But when we're talking just in a practical conversation, it might be something that's more applicable if you frame it in the position of restoration versus enhancement. Because, you know, if you study the history of like plastic surgery, they've had plastic surgery for like hundreds of years, but it was always to like fix horrible injuries or people that have been deformed and things like that. It was to restore people, to make them feel like they can, you know, function in society. That all changed in, the 70s, 80s or something like that, when plastic surgery became a thing in Hollywood. So it's interesting how even that, like that became enhancement, you know, and it's a culturally, I mean, I don't know if it's entirely accepted, but certainly in California, in Southern California, those types of practices are accepted. And so that is a cultural issue where they have accepted culturally a notion of enhancement, not from any sort of benefit other than aesthetically. And so that mindset is what I think is going to be more pervasive in how this becomes normalized. And that's my baby in the background there, if you can hear her. This, I don't know if you guys can see, is it sharing my screen or is it sharing my logo on the screen?
Just see your logo. You can do the screen share if you want. You'll be on full screen.
I thought I did the application here, but let me see here. This is just wanted to share this from earlier. Is it doing the screen now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a cover of the book God and Gollum Inc. By Norbert Wiener. He's the father of cybernetics. So this is the guy that actually like pretty much came up with the whole concept of cybernetics. So, I mean, like I said, this stuff is the education of what this stuff is and the origins. The more I learn, the more I'm wanting to build a farm. But I, you know what? I can't add a whole lot to what you guys said in terms of the greater implications here, because really, you guys have all brought it back to the gospel, and I have to agree with you guys there. And I think the importance here, which is so interesting, is that the simplicity of the gospel message is lost in all this technology and all the stuff that we're, you know, social media and all this stuff. And I think ultimately the biggest message that we're going to have is that, like, bringing it back to that simple gospel message. It's not really any different. You know, yeah, we talk about, like, you know, the crazy things, all the gnarly stuff happening out there, but it's not so much that we're making it up anymore. It's we're just commenting on what the world is providing out there and showing us. And, you know, a lot of it does need to be taken down or at least called out. And obviously, you know, in the world we live in today, even calling it out doesn't make a difference so much anymore with certain sectors of our, you know, at least our digital existence. But yeah, it's all back to the simplicity of the gospel message. And that's what I hope people walk away with from our discussion, you know, the next gen conversation. How do we bring this conversation to the next generation? Well, we got to have the foundation first. We got to stand on that solid rock. And I think all of us here are doing that. And, you know, hopefully that, that part of the message is clear, because I think people can be introduced to this stuff and not realize that we're actually trying to preach the gospel here, guys. We're not trying to say like, go run and, you know, build a cave or something. Although that doesn't sound like a bad idea. Huh, Tim? You gonna help me out, build a cave?
Did you say build a cave? I'm not sure how to respond to that.
You have all that space up there in Montana.
Yeah, Tim, all those caves that you built up there.
We can all just move to the Amazon and quit all of this business and our lives will be much more simpler.
No, you told me way too many horror stories about those.
Oh, I don't mind. After what you said, man. We'll be all right.
I got a little plot of land that I just purchased down in Antarctica. I'm naming it Base 211 if you guys want to join me, you know. Man, but listen, one more time, just to let everybody know, if they didn't write it down before, September 14th through the 16th of 2018, it's literally right around the corner, Branson, Missouri. That's where we're going to be broadcasting from. They are sold out, but you can get your live streaming package right now at gensix.com. That's GENSIX.com, all spelled out, gensix.com. And we've been talking with Gon Shimura, Josh Peck, Timothy Alberino, and myself. And again, we didn't even scratch the surface on the meat of what we're going to be talking about at the conference. We are saving that for the conference, but we're just having a little fireside chat here tonight. And we hope you guys have enjoyed it and want to thank you all for tuning in. And until the next time we meet again, God bless and good night.